Les conférences du Collège de France.
Oui, bonjour. Donc, nous accueillons aujourd'hui la dernière conférence de Mara Chiara Gasparini, qui va élargir les horizons chronologique et géographique, puisque ça va démarrer à partir des sites. Ça va aller jusqu'aux Mongols et ça nous emmènera, je crois, jusqu'à Palerme, dans les églises romanes. Voilà, un parcours à la Strigovski ou à la Baltrushaitis, on peut dire aussi André Grabar, qui va donc nous montrer comment cette iconographie animale s'est retrouvée emprunter, réinterpréter, etc. Alors, Mara Chiara, si tu speak.
Thank you very much. This is my last lecture at the College of France, so I want to thank France Grenet again for inviting me here. And today I will conclude with the Mongol inheritance of Central Asian and Chinese motif on textiles, some of which I discussed in my previous lecture here, and their impact on European and art and architecture. And so between the 6th and 14th century, the land between Eastern Iran and Western China became a crucible of visual and material culture as Iranian, Turco-Mongolian and Chinese empires contended with one another while benefiting from a new period of cross-continental exchange unfolding across the Eurasian land and sea route. In the 6th century, as I mentioned, a new textile tradition, as I mentioned in details, as I discussed in details in my previous lectures, took shape within Central Asia and laid the foundation for the following Mongol weaving developed in the 13th century. An extensive bestiary of fabulous zoomorphic creatures became enclosed in rondels or diamond patterns and joined various geometric motifs. These textiles and their motifs found their way into sacred spaces of various religions, inviting people from diverse backgrounds to witness and participate in this cultural phenomenon. The Sino-Iranian textile tradition that was instrumental in creating a shared Eurasian visual matrix for manifesting powerful bodies in sacred spaces was shared by Buddhist shrines, temples and caves, and also Christian churches. Over time, textile and textile motif became inseparable from the visual culture of sanctities in both religions. In the West, the medieval culture of relics played a significant role in the circulation and preservation of Asian textiles, often used to wrap the bodies of popes, emperor, high nobility, and saints, whose bones were frequently transferred from the East. In Europe, churches and monasteries received textiles from temporal and spiritual powers, and like the Buddhist caves in the East, these motifs were transferred from textile to other decorative media adorning church interiors. Among all the zoomorphic images that reappeared on Mongol textiles, the four hair circles and the four lion circles trace back to archaic models that became prevalent in the 6th century during the movement and domination of Turco-Mongolic people in Central Asia. And these are the two case studies I will discuss today. But before discussing these two examples, I will first talk about the development of Mongol textiles and how they were recorded in Eastern and Western sources. In the Divine Comedy, Dante Alighieri, in describing Geryon, the monster of fraud with a human face, leonine pulse, snake body, and scorpion tail, wrote, "With colors more, groundworks of embroidery, never in cloth did Tartars make, not Turks, nowhere such tissues by Arachnes laid." Dante clearly referred to a fine, colorful textiles made by the Tartars and the Turks, who also produced embroidery. The comparison with the monster skins not only remark on the high quality of the textile structure known at the time in Italy, but also on the difference between Western Asian and Eastern Asian textiles, the Turks and the Tartars. The word Tartar was generally applied to most textiles produced during the 13th and 14th centuries in the Mongol Empire, Panni tartarici typically referred to all weavings from the East that were different from those made in the Islamic Mediterranean areas, called panni saraceni or Saracen cloth or saracinati, which were lightweight plain silks, sometimes woven in a twill tabby structures. Many of these textiles appear in contemporary painting, contemporary medieval paintings, such as the Annunciation with St. Margaret and St. Saint-Saëns by Simone Martini and Lippo Memmi in Florence. The mantle of the angel might be a representation of one of the types described in the inventory of King Philip V of France, that also lists clothes in gold and silk in the Palace of the Louvre. In particular, Tartarin taffeta, golden tartar, iridescent tartar of Lucca, all different from the samit or nasij, kimka, and other golden cloth or with golden decoration, like the textile of the angel robes. These types of weavings, tartar and nasij, began to be produced in Europe. These terms were often used interchangeably or to name structure that originated in other countries, such as the knack called Turki, literally Turkish knack, as it read in the king's inventories. And here are two examples. First, from the Balif to our Lord the King in Escria on the 20th of October 1327, 12 cloths of Turki, of which 6 big and 6 small. Two knacks called Turkish, which she gave to one to the Santiago de Compostela in Galicia and the others to Marguerite de Lambrie. Also, Marco Polo, in his account Il Milione, mentioned that the Armenians and Greeks produced Tartar silks under Turkish rule, and Naki were also produced by the Turks. Also, the traveler Ibn Battuta, in the chronicle of his journey in Asia, uses the terms Nak and Nasij to describe golden silk or silk brocaded in gold. However, as stated in the Codex Cumanicum, glossary of in Latin, Persian, Cuman, and Turkic words, dated to 1324-25, these terms referred specifically to two different types of silk production in the 13th century, reproduced in West Asia and eventually in Europe. Again, in La Pratica della Mercatura, or the Practicing of Trading, Francesco Balducci Pegoletti differentiated the two weaving. Pegoletti recorded that the types of textiles sold in Constantinople by the piece were velvet of silk and camuque marmati and cloth of gold from every region, and nacchetti from every region, and nacchi from every region, and similarly, cloth of gold and silk except for the zendade. Based on the textual and material sources analyzed, it seems like Naki and Nacchetti, as well as Zendadi, produced in the 13th and 14th centuries, were weavings of Iranian Central Asian origin. During the Yuan dynasty, the Chinese word Nashishi, which has no literal meaning, was employed as a transliteration of the Persian word Nasij, meaning cloth of gold. Three main types of golden weaving were produced at the same time, but despite their very similar appearance, they were all made in different structures. These were the jindwazi, or gilded silk, referred to tabby or twill ground with repeating patterns made with golden, brocaded or lancet, decorative weft or gilded paper threads. The nashishi, which was a fully decorated lampas in gold, they could have cotton weft and golden thread made of leather, as in Islamic territories, or golden twisted thread, sometimes also employed together in the same structure. Pattern and motif were generally of Central Asian inspiration. The third one was a sort of golden weft face compound developed from the Tang dynasty types, which was recorded in China as Jin. One of the features of the new structures was an inner double warp, while the weft system could have had a set of two or three types of threads, also brocading. Apart from the golden set of thread, twisted or flat, the others were yellow or brown in order to create a full golden visual effect. And beside this tree, there was also a fourth type of polychrome weaving, classified as sadalachi, or complex lampas, perhaps developed from the 8th century silk samith. An example of sadalachi might be the piece excavated in Inner Mongolia and dated to the 14th century, which became popular across Eurasia and reproduced in Italy as well, as you can see with the one here is in the Inner Mongolia and the other one on your right is a piece in the Metropolitan Museum that of unknown provenance, and the museum categorized it as a Central Asian, Sicilian or North African, and they both have the same type of griffin, back-to-back griffin in roundels. Apparently, it was the Persian scientist Jamal ad-Din who first, in 1287, led the weavers of a workshop in Kambalik, or Beijing, in the production of sadalachi. The Mongols reached Italy in the 14th century. In 1338, Pope Benedict XII ensured the arrival of a Mongol delegation dispatched from the Yuan Empire 2 years earlier through the Kingdom of Naples, which at the time lay in the hands of Tuscan and Genoese merchants. A copy of the Lotus Sutra, dated to 1346, is held in the Vatican Library. Not surprisingly, images of the Mongols, Asian textiles, and other objects of art and commodities, which all circulated among Eurasian sacred and royal courts, began to be included in various contexts and were reproduced with local materials. Textile name Nacchi and Nacchetti started to appear in Italian inventories only in the 14th century, and they are clearly distinct from the types called Camca or Camca or Camucca and Marmati, Marmanati, Marimanti, the transliteration in Latin or other medieval European languages of Asian terms has generated, however, the common idea that they all refer to the same textile category. The distinction from the Kamka excludes the assumption that the Persian Kimka, from which the Chinese Jinhua and possibly the Italian Kamka or Kamuka adopted for the textile produced from Herat and Damascus to Damascus and Alexandria, as well as the textile called Marmati, a possible transliteration of the Arabic word Marema, perhaps a golden brocaded weaving, could be included in the general categories of Tartar textiles as they were known in late medieval Europe. The Vatican Archive in Rome includes a lengthy list of medieval sources that can help us differentiate Asian textile structures and patterns that were imported and reproduced in Italy from those that were inspired and developed in Europe. Papal inventories, cardinal wills, and clerical treasure lists are among the documents that contain the most description of luxurious textile weaving in the Middle Age, and they can also be studied as a main point of comparison with the Buddhist reception and use of textile along the Northern Silk Road. Like in the Buddhist context of Dunhuang and Turfan, Christian treasure were indeed enriched by gift from believers in exchange for indulgence. The inventory of Pope Boniface VIII represent one of the most valuable documents regarding papal treasures. Part of the treasure, which was offered to the Cathedral of Anagni, provides an overview of the other parts given to St. Peter. Although the treasure of St. Peter has been lost or looted over the centuries, a few items, like the Politico Stefaneschi here on display, made by Giotto for the main altar of the Basilica, have survived. The papal treasure and the basilica treasure were indeed of two separate types. The inventory of Pope Boniface VIII and his successor, Pope Benedict XI, referred to the treasures of the Holy See rather than the chapter or capitulum, the ecclesiastic body. This explains why papal treasures were often moved while others remained in the Basilica of St. Peter and were impoverished or enriched with various items. According to the book of a benefactor, or Libro dei Benefattori, during the period of the papacies in Avignon in France, the treasure was enriched only by luxurious textiles that were offered as gifts. Around 1367, before the re-establishment of the papacy in Rome, a new inventory of the gift, received between 1294 and 1303, was written. Tartar textiles, especially those patterned with roundels and animals, began to be listed. For instance, we can read about two pluvialia, the diaspor and panno tartarico, or tartar cloth, in folio 144. Or again, a planet of white tartar fully decorated with golden refined small work in etc. etc. in folio 50, and again a small tunic and a dalmatic of tartar cloth work with the refined small golden pattern, and again with the lion and golden grape leaves, griffin, parrot, peacock, eagles included in some roundel of grape leaves and polychrome silk in folio 50. Some fragments with the pattern just described, especially the grape leaves, are held in the Victoria and Albert Museum in London. A set of three fragments with only leaves or tiny birds and another with leaves surrounding small animals, dated to between 1300 and 1350, are held there. The fragment may be identified as camuca, described in the Lo Statuto della Corte dei Mercanti, the regulation of merchants in Lucca in 1376. In this statuto, different types of camuchi are described and are generally sold at the same price as the baldachin made in Baghdad and golden cloth. They are woven with small patterns, often foliage and small animals and birds. The style of this textile very much recalls a type of lampas with satin ground and brocading golden weft produced in Iran in the same period. It is possible that the Italian type was an economical version based on the original luxurious Eastern one, listed as tartar rather than camuca, which was generally brocaded and much heavier. Despite the structure, the design of grape leaves and other small types of foliage can, with little doubt, be dated to the 14th century. The panel of the thrones depicted by Bernardo Daddi in the Madonna and Child enthroned with Angel and Saint in the Galleria degli Uffizi in Florence, for instance, provides visual evidence of the use of such luxurious compounds woven not only for clothing, but also for decoration of sacred and religious spaces. Among the many textiles listed in medieval sources, there is also a type called kataxamito, and perhaps it was a type of samite from Katai or from China, from which the name kataxamito may have derived. Although little information has survived about the structure of these textiles, samite and kataxamite are differentiated from one another and listed separately in the inventories. And for instance, here we have two dorsali, of which one is made of green and red baldachin with pattern of waves like fish bones and various images, figures and animals, and it is hemmed with green samite. The other is checkered with silver thread and red silk, on which checks they are lions. And I found something that might be I have a piece from Dumbarton Oaks that I found that very much recalls these descriptions. And another one, a cape of red samite embroidered in cypress work, so Cipriensi, with the roundels in which are griffins and two-headed eagles, with a frieze including half image, a working thread of gold fillet, set in tabernacle made of pearls, and so on and so forth. And this description recalls the pivale of San Nicholas in the treasury of the Cathedral of Anagni. The Cypriot work, or Opus Cipriense, was a specific style of embroidery imported from Cyprus and adopted in Italy. In the papal inventories, more than 30 entries list embroideries in the Cyprus style, which are clearly distinguished from more than 15 other types listed as work in the Byzantine style or made with clothes from Byzantium, the Opera Romanae or the Opera de Romania. High quality texts also appear in the last will of the cardinal, who since the 12th century had obtained the licentia testandi, a license to make a will, from the Pope. The first one was released by Pope Celestine III to Cardinal Peter of Piacenza. Originally, the licentia testandi had the aim of protecting the cardinals, who generally came from high-class families, from the laic sovereign, who had the right to claim and collect patrimonies or ius polis. But when during the papacy of Innocent IV, the ius poli became a right of the Pope, the licentia testandi was extended to the whole church and all religious. The patrimony was divided into money, goods and chattel, properties, books and residuum, which was redistributed among the poor or small churches and religious institutions. The majority of textiles in Italian or European collection, they came from Asia and are datable between the 13th and 14th centuries, are Central Asian or West Asian. Nevertheless, the style of manufacture, or just a few, can be identified as possibly Chinese. Among those is a lanceolate pass of green ground with flowers in yellow of a metal thread, which was used as the lining of the meter of Bishop Odone da Colonna. These flower patterns are also recalls the type used for the dalmatic found in the San Nicolae Church in Stralsund and another one in the Brandenburg Cathedral in Germany. It is most likely that the meter was created at the beginning of the 13th century when such embroidered patterns were widely produced in central Italy. However, it is not unusual to find earlier weaving used only in the 14th and 15th century clothing combined with other weaving datable to a different period or traceable to a different production. Many entries in the papal inventory of 1295 correspond to surviving textile fragments that are generally dated to a later period. An exception that can explain this phenomenon is the regalian preserved in the Church of San Domenico in Perugia, attributed to Pope Benedict XI, who during his papacy donated it to the church. Today, the dalmatic of the Pope appears as a patchwork constructed over time in a cut-and-paste process that saw the substitution of part of the original compounds for smaller pieces of different types of weaving of Asian origin, most likely panni tartarici and local embroideries. Many other items were also added to the original regalia over the centuries. In the 20th century, there was the habit of cutting liturgical vestment into smaller pieces to make sacred relics to worship. This explained the large number of textile fragments present in museums worldwide and also the recycling process of old and new weaving in the recreation of liturgical vestment, like the dalmatic held in Perugia, that most likely was originally made with textile from the papal treasury, which at the time was stored between Perugia and Assisi. By contrast, the regalia of Can Grande First della Scala, Primo della Scala, discovered in his tomb in Verona in 1921, which for structure and styles appear very similar to the compounds that composed the dalmatic of Benedict XI, was found intact, as originally assembled. It remains one of the most important discoveries of the last century in Italy, studied and presented to the public only in 1983, when the city of Verona organized an exhibition in the Sala Bojan di Castelvecchio for the sixth centenary of Dante Alighieri's death. In 2004, the city of Verona decided to reopen the Ark of Can Grande and to reanalyze his body, textiles, and other materials. Among the textiles discovered in the Ark of Can Grande, four in particular represent technical and stylistic development that had occurred in Central Asia for more than seven centuries. They can also be seen as prototypes of most Italian weavings that employed part of the original pattern in similar composition or in new personal typology, like a sort of koine or lingua franca that characterized the production of the Mongol period. One of the four textiles is similar to the angel robe in the Annunciation by Simone Martini and Lippo Memmi that I showed you before, a white ground with golden floral motif and small animals. The golden membrane thread were originally made in silver. A few other fragments with supplementary golden thread are comparable to these, most likely produced in Central Asia. Drop-shaped motif or palmettos regularly appear as a singular or repeated frames of animals in pairs as foliage or to fill gaps in the composition. The funerary clothing of Can Grande always includes this element combined with others in many variations. However, the remaining textile that was supposed to be the external dress shows a unique composition of this pattern. It is a red ground with a repetition of adpinet or pine cone, as it's known in Italian inventories, surrounded by foliage. The pine cones woven on these textiles includes a kind of flower similar to the one on the shoes of Pope Benedict XI. Say that, I will move to my two case studies now. And so the two Mongol textile fragments with interlocked animals, the hares and the lion, can be traced back to two pre-Mongol architectural examples created by a collaboration of Christian, Jewish, and Muslim people who adopted Eastern religious ideas, possibly through the acquisition of Central Asian textile, which continued to be also woven during the Mongol period, as I explained. And these are the Cathedral of Santa Maria Annunziata in Otranto, in Puglia, and the Palatine Chapel in Palermo, Sicily, both in southern Italy, and both carrying such motif. Founded in the 11th century, the Cathedral of Santa Maria Annunziata in Otranto was established a century later with a mosaic composition covering the whole nave up to the apse. It was created by a group of Greek-Italian artists led by the monk Pantaleone from the nearby monastery of San Nicola di Casole, established in 1098 by Bohemond I of Antioch, leader of the First Crusade. This composition has been interpreted as a Kabbalistic representation of the Old Testament and esoteric Eastern images. The register presents three complete mystical systems, Christian, Jewish, and Hinduist, based on the representation of the Hebrew Kabbalist Tree of Life that divides the mosaic into two sections, with images of the Old Testament, medieval zoomorphic creatures, scenes of the medieval literature epic cycle, and a lion head with four bodies in a circle, which is identical to the textile that I showed you before, from Gorizia, that Friedrich Fischbach labeled as Sassanian, but in my opinion was produced during the Mongol period. Most importantly, the four also include symbols of the Indian mystical system linked to the Greek hermeneutics. Monsignore Grazio Gianfreda, who studied and published extensively about the mosaics of Otranto, saw the image of the four lions as the representation of the Catholic Church pointing to the four corners of the world. The composition of the mosaic floor was a massive display of erudition, courtly refinement, and spiritual eclecticism, drawing from and integrating an extremely culturally diverse body of mythological, astrological, and esoteric spiritual tradition. In addition to such to legends such as King Arthur and Alexander Romans, it presents the entanglement of a mystical system, and also Latin and possibly Pseudo-Devanagari or Hebrew scripts, which to date have not yet been deciphered, and decorate some of the roundels in the mosaic. The composition is a figurative and symbolic representation of the cosmogonic cycle based on the mystical doctrine of Hesychast practiced by the Basilian order, unfolding between the branches of a large tree of life carried by two opposite elephants. Saint Basil, who restored the monastic life of the Orthodox Church of the East, included tantric techniques in the contemplative prayer. The sacred vocalization in the Indian religious Om, as written in the Devanagari script, might have been visually associated with the Christian Alpha Omega as it appears in the Greco-Byzantine art, referring to the beginning and the end as the ultimate revelation of God. Otranto had been a Jewish colony since the 9th century, a part of the Norman Southern Italian Kingdom from which in 1095, 12,000 crusades were sent to Jerusalem. It is not surprising, therefore, that such elements, which most likely were depicted in secret texts and textiles brought back from the East during and after the crusade, were incorporated into the representation of gnosis, or knowledge, as interpreted by various Eurasian cultures into the mosaic floor of the cathedral. Among the motifs that find correspondence in textiles, the elephant also carry the central holy tree on their back, representing the Kabbalah tree, which was very popular among Byzantine silks. Such an iconography can be traced back to the 6th century mosaic floor of the Mount Synagogue at Nerim, where we see the earliest images of two elephants under a palm tree. But the elephant is also the animal designed to represent the Muladhara Chakra, meaning the root of existence in Hindu Tantrism, as I also explained in my previous lecture regarding a Tibetan textile hanging. And again, the elephant appeared on one of the earliest Islamic silk, along with composite beast, camel, earth, and an Arabic inscription that was most likely woven in Khorasan in the 10th century, but ended here in France. Nonetheless, according to Gianfreda, the two elephants in Otranto specifically represent the Christian martyrs Balaam and Josaphat. The two are the main character of a medieval hagiographic tale on the conversion of the Buddha to Christianity. The story was originally reported in Sanskrit Mahayana Buddhist text, readapted into Manichaean texts in Central Asia or Eastern Iran around the 6th century, and allegedly transmitted by the Byzantine monk John of Damascus in the 7th century. The Christianization of these texts occurred around the 10th century first into Greek and was eventually translated into Latin in the 11th century. The elephants carrying the central tree in the mosaics, however, are one smaller than the other and have two tusks and a bitter rundle in the body, while the other has only one tusk and a red circle in the body. As depicted, they might instead probably represent the male and female entities carrying a sun and a moon as the two main elements of the cosmos. The mosaic floor of Otranto, with Jewish, Christian, and Hinduist symbology, remains an enigma. However, many of the elements can be found in contemporary and later textiles. There is little doubt, in fact, that both the Palatine Chapel and the nearby Royal Tiras workshop in Palermo in Sicily, established a few years earlier, provided iconographic models also for the mosaic floor in Otranto. The Royal Tiras workshop, established in Palermo around the 12th century, was a major step in the advent of Italian textile productions. Between the end of the 13th century and the beginning of the 14th century, many weavers were eventually relocated to Lucca in Tuscany and continued producing silk textiles and copies, those coming from the East that, as I explained, were generally categorized as Tartar, and eventually many of these artisans in the 15th century moved to Lyon. Today, only a few fragments from the Sicilian Tiras workshop have survived, but clear similarity can be seen between this lattice motif with zoomorphic head and elongate bodies and the characters in the mosaics in Otranto, and also the Mucarna ceilings of the Palatine chapels. The ceiling of the Palatine Chapel, which was commissioned by King Roger II, remains one of the most fascinating examples of intercultural collaboration that showed the tight link between Eastern and Western art, and the only examples in wood that survives today, and interestingly, not in a mosque or an Islamic building. The Royal Tiras workshop was Italy's first textile workshop of complex silk weavings and embroidery. Between the 8th and 9th century, the existence of Iranian population is recorded in North Africa, Sicily, and the Iberian Peninsula. The so-called Saracens from North Africa, who generally included Muslim people of different cultural and ethnic background, introduced the art of weaving to Sicily around the end of the 10th century and the beginning of the 11th century. And under Roger II, eventually Byzantine weavers from West Asia and Greece began to train local people in golden embroidery. Similarly, the magnificent ceiling of the Palatine Chapel was created through the collaboration of Christian, Muslim, and Jewish artisans. It shows multicultural imagery consisting of archaic and contemporary artistic forms of possibly, but not exclusively, Iranian Central Asian origin. Among the various motifs that appear in the Mukarnas, lions in various forms are the most popular. They are often depicted in pairs, sometimes with two back-to-back bodies with wings and one head. Such an image, for instance, that you see here, and this is one of the many examples, is found in a contemporary palace in Termez, same period. However, it also records a textile in the Cleveland Museum of Art, dating to the later Mongol period, that can be compared with the robe of Alexios Apokagos, a chief minister and head of the navy in the Byzantine Empire, as portrayed in a folio here in Paris. Finally, in the Palatine Chapel, we can find a trio of lions sharing one head depicted on the octagonal junction section between the Mukarnas, which records the type from Otranto. The three lions in a circle appear already in the Achaemenid period in Persepolis, dating to the 6th century BCE, as well as on later Seljuk material of 11th and 12th centuries. Examples are this incense burner in the Louvre or the so-called Vaso Vescovile in the British Museum that features the animals of the zodiac, among which also the lion with the sun divided into three parts. They create a triangle. Such types of patterns, as I mentioned, continue to be reproduced until the Mongol period and in a similar but different version with four lions. And except for the textile from Gorizia, we have also a tiles that is dated a little bit early, so 12th century, now from Venice apparently, but now in Boston. The Mukarna ceiling of the Palatine chapels also include the three interlocked hairs in a circle, which records the motif on the other Mongol textile fragment in the Cleveland Museum of Art. The image is first seen as at the center of some of the 6th century Buddhist caves depicted in Dunhuang in China, as depicted as textile canopies. Such an image most likely carried a universal cosmogonic idea of renovation as well. Beside the three hair motif in the Xue and Tang period Dunhuang caves, the image is found again on a unique terracotta plaque discovered in Barikot in the Swat Valley, Pakistan, dated to Indus-Shai period. And in this case, the hairs are squatting instead of running. And although the archaeological evidence collected in situ is not conclusive, it has been suggested that the site was a Buddhist temple used to perform a local Homa ritual at the fire altar. In the West, instead, earliest example of this image can be found in Sicily again, but not in the Palatine Chapel, but in Monreale, and dated to the 12th century. And here you see four hairs running in a circle, but they are not interlocked. It was, however, not until the Mongol period that the image reappeared on different type of art objects across Eurasia, so from Himalayan Buddhist temple, Islamic pottery, Christian and Jewish manuscript, and as well as decorative element in later churches, especially in France, United Kingdom and Germany. And here in France, you have two examples, one with three hairs and one with fours in Lyon. And was also used after the Mongols. These are another example of two Portuguese in conversation that is here in France, but is a Mughal, Indian Mughal on ink on paper, gouache on paper, sorry. The acquisition of this motif in Buddhist and Christian context followed the recording of the Zoroastrian canon in written form in the 6th century during the establishment of the first Turkic Khaganate. Although Zoroastrianism had become the official religion of the Iranians during the Parthian period, it was not until the reign of the Sasanian king Khosrow I that the Avesta was revised and became the recognized vehicle of Iranian divine concept. Zoroastrian priests are indeed seen on Sino-Sogdian sarcophagi discovered in China from the same period. However, early contacts between Iranian and Chinese can be dated back to the Han period when Zoroastrianism and Buddhism spread in the Middle Kingdom. It is documented that the Iranian Buddhist missionary Anshigao, allegedly a Parthian prince, arrived in the Chinese capital Luoyang in 148 CE and was the earliest known translator of Indian texts into Chinese. A few Han bronze figures dressed in foreign clothing supporting lamps also suggest the iconographic transmission of Zoroastrian images in the Middle Kingdom. In particular, a bronze lamp supported by a man wearing the so-called Phrygian cap might suggest the presence of a group of Iranian priests, also generally known as Magi. According to Victor Mayer, their presence in the Middle Kingdom can even be traced back to the 8th century BCE. One of the Caucasian-looking figurines discovered in a Zhou tomb in Shanxi would carry the Sinitic character Wu in the shape of a cross pendant, which reads as Miag, meaning magician, a transliteration of the old Iranian Magus. The cross-pendant, the swastika and the triskelion, three rotating joint spirals, are among the most popular archaic symbols linked to the cosmos and are often associated with comets in different cultures. In particular, in Central Asia, such motifs were included among those marks, also known as tamgas, which initially served to identify groups of people and were concentrated in ancient temples and sanctuaries. As Sergei Yatsenko has pointed out, these sites were eventually abandoned at the end of BCE, but passively used by others at the beginning of the Common Era. Bronze seals with simple or more complex motifs, including circular coiled animals, were discovered in Central Asia and identified as part of the Oxus civilization. Similarly, Tibetan and Mongols continued to use bronze amulets, known as tokchak, and Nestorian crosses, respectively. In particular, those with a triangular shape will refer to the female original truth in Tibetan mystical literature. After the fall of the Han Dynasty and the disintegration of the Xianbei state in the northern steppes in the 4th century CE, the Tuoba clan established the Northern Wei dynasty in China and became supporter of Buddhism, and the Sogdian began to strain their role as merchant and extend the commerce between China and Iran and Byzantium. Through an accelerated process of Sinicization, diffusion of Buddhism in the East, and gradual conversion to Christianity in the West, foreign elements were used to visualize the divine. The ancient Iranian concept of kharna, or glory, assimilated in Sogdiana, was eventually transferred as foreign to China, as stated in Sogdian Buddhist sources discovered in Dunhuang. Along with southern natives, northern people ruled China until the 6th century. As I mentioned in one of my previous lectures here, Chinese sources such as the Book of Wei mentioned the existence of foreign people between the 5th and 6th century and the use of Turkic and Iranian languages and rites. The name Midwo, which in the 6th century was possibly read as Midda, likely a transliteration of the Indo-Iranian name Mithra, was not unusual among Buddhist monks in the region of Kucha between the 4th and 5th century, such as Shimra Mitra or Dharma Mitra, who never learned how to speak the Chinese language. Mitra, who is found in Zoroastrian texts and associated with the Kharna fire that descended on him, was the giver of the ruler who confirmed power through the divine. By the Tang period, Chinese Buddhism had been completely sinicized. It had become mainly related to the concept of merit achieved through the performance of any Buddhist activities and form of art as visualized in the Dunhuang caves. The use and recycling of textiles, many of which with foreign patterns in the caves, was often due to the offerings that monastic communities received in exchange for their religious and mortuary services and their expertise in art crafts. Textiles often acquired through the Sogdian Turkic trade along the Silk Road were therefore used as a primary source of inspiration for decorating the caves. At the same time, the alliance between the Byzantine and the Western Turkic Khaganate advanced cultural and artistic exchanges between the Buddhist East and the Christian West. In this context, the image of the Magi in their Mithraic costume, wearing a Phrygian cap, bringing gift to the new Christian imperial family, reappears among the mosaics and, more interestingly, on the mantle of Empress Theodora in Ravenna in Italy. Seen as astronomer, able to read and reveal cosmic mysteries, the Magi are mentioned in the Old and New Testament as the three wise men coming from the East. In the same period, the cross patent began to appear on Byzantine coins and seals. In the 6th century, indeed, after the abolishment of Mithraism in the Roman Empire, Mithraic iconography was absorbed into Christianity. Mithra, who is often depicted while killing a bull, is seen with the moon and the sun above its figure, sometimes also found in the shape of a cross patent or a swastika. The meaning of the three hair circles is still unknown, but if one contextualizes it across the border of the broad Sino-Iranian areas under discussion, it discloses a universal idea of the divine linked to the cosmos that can be traced back to a basic notion of geometry known as the Pythagorean theorem and also the subdivision of the equilateral triangle. Pythagoras of Crotone acquired it from Uramen, a priest of the sun at Heliopolis, Egypt, concealing the mystery of the universe of the solilunar geometry. Upon experiment, it was found that all figures possess interrelations by which their volume or extent could be compared with such precision that the process could be described and explained through through arithmetical formula or also graphically. Eventually, the determination of the relations of the diameter of a circle or its circumference, also known as Greek pi, gave rise to a process by which the circle could be squared. Astronomer or magician, as they were considered, discovered that the numbers to express the chronological relations of the sun and the moon to Earth were identical to those that solved the geometrical problem of squaring a circle. The discovery of these square arithmetical qualities led to the magic square, known in China since the Zhou period as the Lo Shu or nine book diagram, the number of which will also create a zodiac sequence. Once transformed into an iconographic motif, the three hair circles might have been used as a variation of the three Iranian dots initially embodied the Avestan concept of Harna, including the three words Humata, good thought, Ukta, good word, and Ashta, good deed. The three-bead motif is often seen in Sassanian clothing and a Sassanian fire altar found on coins. Although no textile with three interlocked hairs dated to the 6th-9th century has survived, fragments with three beads motif have been found in the Taklamakan. In the Chinese Buddhist context, the dots are those envisioned in the center of a spiritual circle or sacred space known as mandala on the ceiling depicted as a canopy, either to represent the three-star constellation, which is also one of the 12 symbols of Chinese sovereignty, or the three bodies of the Buddha, Trikaya, or later the three Buddhist jewels, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. In terms of design, the two variations with three or four hairs might have developed from various prototypes showing cross-cultural and cross-media adaptation. The idea of interlocked and or combined animal can be traced back to ancient Mesopotamia. The earliest known example of similar linked animals is on the Hunt Patera from the Temple of Baal, which was once part of the house of the high priest of Ugarit in Syria. The gold patera dated to the 14th, 13th century BCE shows four animals walking in circle, sharing the horns at the center. The symbology of the hare itself can be explicitly thought in ancient Indian and Chinese astrology, which associated with the moon to express seasonal female renovation. And interestingly, a disc enclosing a single hare also appears depicted in the land of a Buddhist figure in one of the Kizil caves. Nonetheless, the three or four hare circles seems to be one of those composite figures generally labeled as animal art, associated with the seasonal cycles and constellations that affected the nomadic populations who took part in the Chinese and other Eurasian cultures. Once in the Buddhist context, the image might have been envisioned as the cycle of the samsara and the renovation in the human cycle of life and death, represented by both the moon and the sun, which in the caves also appear as two circles or also as comets. The four hare circles, which seem to have circulated mainly in the Mongol period, might have substituted the Buddhist swastika. In terms of graphic elements, however, the combination circle-square created by the running hares and their shared ears at the center records images from the Han period. Instances are one of the comet listed in the so-called Book of Silk, discovered in Mawandoe, Hunan in 1973, which also records the Chinese Wushu coin with the square at the center and the so-called TLV mirror. The circular mirror with a square in the middle and a T at each side, recalling the Byzantine cross portent, was also used for divination in association with the moon and linked to the Taoist immortals. Interestingly, the later Tibetan Kalachakra, Wheel of Time, or Vairochana, Cosmic Buddha Mandala, and the Sri Devi, or female deity Mandala, show similar composition. With the additional mediation of Islamic art, the images were eventually used in medieval Europe to portray the Christian Trinity or Unity, carrying a cosmogonic meaning that connects humanity to the extramundane. Images of the so-called Shield of God or Shield of Trinity began to appear in the 12th century and became even more popular with the expansion of the Mongols in Eurasia. The movement of Turk-Iranian and Proto-Mongolian population catalyzed the visual and material culture of sanctity that developed during the 6th century in Buddhist and Christian contexts. With its broad Eurasian reach, the precious and portal medium of textile that developed and spread through the religious and visual cultural milieu mediated an interrelated body of iconography and ornamental motif across space and time. As movable objects and ideas, textile transmitted motif and patterns across Eurasia in a prestigious medium that were used to express a cross-cultural, intelligible meaning of divine power. The bestowal of robe and remaining by temporal and spiritual power and the cult of relics in the Middle Ages was fundamental for the circulation and preservation of textiles that were used to wrap bodies of saints who were often transferred from the East and treasured along with their hosting places, such as monasteries and churches. Textiles were traded also for a common sense of religious piety in Buddhism and Christianity. They continued through the Islamization of Eurasia. The commercial and spiritual textile trade that occurred in the 6th century accompanied the development of sanctity across the borders. Textiles survived their original traders and users and permitted the long durability of iconographic models, such as the 3-4 hare circle and the 3-4 lion circles, that eventually were adopted by the Mongols. In this context, the golden cloth, or Panni Tartarici, attested to the Mongol as the last descendants in the long golden lineage of nomadic populations who had connected sedentary society through the development of a Eurasian visual and material culture of sanctity over the centuries. Thank you.
Retrouvez tous les contenus du Collège de France sur www.college-de-france.fr.